I'm a director of product management in the EMEA region for Global Crossing, responsible for data services. Data services in Global Crossing constitutes of both the transport layer, so private lines, waves, and so on, and also our IP services, mainly internet services and IPVPN. I have a long history in Global Crossing. I think I will touch the 10 years this summer, and so does Bart, my colleague. And I will hand over the microphone, and he can introduce himself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Can everyone hear me also back in the corner there? Okay, I see some heads nodding. So my name is Bart van der Sloot. I look after Global Crossing services for service providers, carriers, and web hosting companies in the Benelux and Central and Eastern Europe. And we see a lot of debate about peering at the moment in Poland. We see a very active internet exchange. We see all kinds of regulatory discussions. So we thought it might be interesting to share some views and other situations that we see across Europe. Now, you will say, what do you mean with peering cultures? Of course, one of the elements is, how do you get engaged in a peering discussion? And how do you get to an agreement? Now, if you look how that works around the world, it's fun to see that in some countries it's a very formal activity. This picture represents two networks in Pakistan who have just concluded a very formal peering agreement. I think in Europe we are typically a bit more pragmatic. A lot of these discussions are done at meetings and forums like this, which tend to start pretty formal. They then develop into pretty heated debates about peering connections, usually resolved over some wine or beer at the end of the conference. But I think at the other end of the scale, we see the global peering forums, which are typically held at cruise ships along the Florida coastline. And this is a picture which was taken at the Global Peering Forum in 2009. And I can imagine it's very hard to reject a peering request in an environment like this. And I also sometimes regret I ended up in sales and not in traffic engineering, but okay. That is not what we wanted to cover in our presentation. I will talk a little bit about Global Crossing, who we are, what we do. Then Paul will share some more views on these peering cultures. And then at the end, we'll try to draw some conclusions. Who we are. I think Global Crossing, at a glance, we basically do three things. One is we provide high-capacity transport services, so basically all the elements to build global internet backbones, typically dark fiber or wavelength services. We run our own Tier 1 internet backbone on that network, and we provide global network services for enterprises as well as global data center services. We do that on a network which has a global service reach, so we provide these services in all continents, but our main strength is on what we call the core network, which is a network in North America, Latin America, and Europe, and the oceans in between, where we've built the network ourselves, where we fully own it, where we operate it, where we obviously have the best cost base and the most flexibility. And we run that network and the services we provide on it with about 5,000 people worldwide. If we zoom into Europe, you can see on this map that we've basically been digging up the streets anywhere between Madrid and Oslo and Stockholm, and that more recently we've expanded our network into the Central and Eastern European countries. In 2009, we've opened up IP nodes in Helsinki, Warsaw, and Budapest, and in 2010 we'll continue that trend into new countries and new cities. On that network, we run, as I already said, one of the largest internet backbones. Now, Daniel of Level 3 already showed some statistics this morning from Renesas. I'm glad that we're all using the same information. According to the Nodes Index, we have the second shortest hop count of any Tier 1 internet in the world. And according to Renesas, we rank as the third largest network, or the best connected network, in terms of global customer base. Now, for those who've been watching carefully in the presentation this morning, you will have seen who the other players are in this top 12. And I'm happy to see, if I look at this picture, that actually all these players use our network, either as dark fiber or as waves to support their global internet backbone. So basically, from whoever you buy, it'll always run on a first-class network. If you take a slightly different perspective of the same picture, you can see that there's a clear number 1, 2, and 3 in the global internet market, and that the number 4 to 13 are actually very close. Number 1 in terms of customer reach, level 3. Number 2, Sprint, but not being active in Europe, at least not in the wholesale market. Global Crossing as a clear number 3, and then the other players as number 4 to 13. Now, that was a brief overview of who we are and what we do. I'll now hand over to Paul to explain a bit more about the things we see in the European landscape.
Thank you. Okay, a few slides about peering, what we see. Obviously, a peering culture in a country has an impact on profitability of ISPs and the internet experience. In general, you can say that an open policy reduces cost for both the content network and the access network. And typically, it also ensures that there is plenty of bandwidth between the networks, resulting in a good quality experience of the end user. Although in countries where there's much more restricted peering or paid peering, you see that this typically results in bottlenecks or peering interconnects that are upgraded too late, and that end users start to complain. And then that is especially visible when you look at streaming video over the net. Then you get something like this, where you want to see something like this. Okay, there are many different factors that play a role in, call it the peering culture. First of all, there's the traffic, both the demand side and the supply side. The internet exchanges play an important role. Is it an active exchange? Do they offer good quality? Have they low entrance cost? How many members do they have? And so on. Also a relevant part is there a dominant access networks that controls the vast majority of the eyeballs? Are there enough carrier neutral facilities in a country that enable or offer good opportunities to establish private or public peerings? Are there international tier one networks present in a country, or the large global content providers? Not too long ago, all traffic for Eastern Europe was picked up in Frankfurt. And nowadays, the networks have moved, and most networks have a presence there. And as a last element, regulation. Peering is almost everywhere still unregulated, but you see more and more discussions, and I think you here in Poland know all about it, that regulators also start to interfere with peering. Of course, look at the content side. We all know, I think, who the big content providers are in the world. That's the Google, the Facebooks, the YouTubes. By the way, number 6 here on this list is Wikipedia. You see a clear difference. Local content providers, they all have a very open peering policy, which is, of course, in their interest to do so, to enable their content. The big global content providers, like the Yahoos, the Facebooks, the Microsofts, they have a very open peering policy, where the Googles and the YouTubes are a bit more selective. So there's not a clear picture here. It's a mixed picture. Also, the global CDNs, you see a mixed picture in their peering policies. Akamai, Edgecast being very open, and Limelight being very selective. But even if you look at content providers that are very similar in their nature, in their activities, like Yahoo and Google. You see that Yahoo has a open peering policy with a relatively limited presence, only 12 countries, where Google is a little bit more selective in with who they peer, but they have a good presence in 20 countries, and there are even a few big countries like Germany, Russia, France, and Italy, where they have even in-country regional presence. Looking at the incumbent, you see that the incumbent, or in general the larger access networks, are faced with continuous investments in more speed and capacity, and at the same time flat or declining revenues per end user. I think in countries like Poland there's still enough space to increase broadband penetration, but in the more, countries like the Netherlands, the broadband penetration is already on such a high level that you really can't expect that to grow much more. And the incumbent is thinking, and all the traffic is increasing and increasing, and I need to upgrade my network, and I don't get much in return. So it was, I like the remark of level three in the presentation that don't expect others to solve your problems because they don't. And at the same time, this is the behavior we are seeing from some of the incumbents. Basically, they have a problem because their end users are generating or demanding a lot of traffic, and at the same time, they're trying to have the content delivery networks or the content providers or the middleman, the party that brings the traffic to the network, to let them pay for that traffic. It all results in some different approaches. You see that in the Netherlands and in the UK, for instance, there's a real open policy for regional and in-country networks. As we all know, Deutsche Telekom is very much in favor of paid peering. And you see that, like Telefonica and France Telecom, they have a very, very restrictive policy for in-country peering. Telefonica is quite happy to peer with other large networks as long as it's outside Spain. And you see the same behavior with France Telecom. Okay, again, this is sourced from Renesis, and here we see two countries, Germany and France, where you can see that the incumbent, so DTEC and France Telecom, are clearly the by far the biggest player in the internet market. The bars you see at the top, after behind the name Deutsche Telekom, the number one always has a full bar that represents 100%, and the size of the other networks is always expressed as a percentage of the number one. So what you see here is that Deutsche Telekom and France Telecom are really dominant in their markets. Here are two examples of countries, Belgium and United Kingdom, where there is, as you can see, a fairly large number of competitors, and they're all quite big. And although the incumbent may be sometimes, in some cases, still be the biggest, although in United Kingdom that's not the case, they're pretty close together. And then we have some, let's call it the in-between countries, like the Netherlands and Poland, where although there are a few competitors that have a significant size already, the incumbent is still clearly the biggest player in the market. Now you see for the Netherlands, of course, for us a very familiar situation, that KPN is clearly the biggest player. They bought a lot of smaller ISPs the last few years. But the cable operators like Ziggo are really becoming an important player. Okay, I apologize for this slide not being that well readable with the small print, but it does show a nice overview of differences that we see in Europe. If you look at the most competitive market for internet in Europe, which is in the UK, you see that there are fairly evenly divided market share among a number of players. BT, as the incumbent, only has a quarter of the market, a little bit less, a little bit more. But at the same time, BT still controls, of course, by the unbundling of the local loop, 77% of the access. If you look at, for instance, Spain, where Telefonica is clearly the biggest player with largest market shares, and it also controls, 80% of the access in that country. France, that's the left pie chart at the bottom. France Telecom has less than half of the market share, and the interesting thing to notice about France is that France hardly has any alternative infrastructure. So all competition is on the copper and the unbundling of the copper. But apparently in France, it's regulated very well, so it offers equal opportunities to all providers, that even France Telecom owns or controls 95% of the access in France, you still see good competition with a two significant competitors. That's Neuf Cegetel, now called SFR, and Iliad, which is also known as Free. And then last example, Belgium. Belgium is the duopoly country where there are two very large parties, one over cable infrastructure and the other one over copper, and that's Belgium. It's also interesting to see, besides the how they control the access, is what the differences are between incumbents and, let's say, the number two or three player in the markets. If you look at how much of their traffic they peer away and how much is going through transit, you see that 97% of KPN's traffic is peered away, where the number two in the Dutch market has only 52%. You see in Belgium, difference is even much, much bigger, 69% versus 4%. And also in Spain, there's a significant difference between Telefonica and Gestel. Okay, this is a slide about the internet exchanges. What you see in Europe that are only three really international internet exchanges, and those are the ones in Germany, Netherlands, and in France. They're sort of equally in size. They have around 500 members, and also looking at the traffic, they are by far the biggest traffic generators. You see that the other internet exchanges, they serve primarily domestic traffic. What's also clearly visible, I think, in the market, that an active internet exchange with good facilities and so on is a catalyst to grow peering relationships. And not only in the technical way and in the facility way, but also because they organize all sorts of events like this that, let's say, enable the social peering aspect of it. And we see that international networks, the tier one networks, have a clear a preference to establish private peerings in the well-known and well-established data centers like the Equinixes, the Telecities, and the Interactions. Okay, now I'll hand over now to Bart, who will walk you through some more detailed country examples.
Let's try to understand how these differences actually translate into the end user experience and cost for the end user. And what strikes me most is that if you look at France, as we saw, the peering culture is very strange. There's many internet exchanges, so there's a very fragmented peering environment. France Telecom is very protective, which is the dominant network. But still, if you look at the end user offering in France, I think it's probably the most competitive environment from an end user perspective in Europe. For €30 per month, you have very fast internet access, unlimited telephony, TV included, and I don't think anywhere in Europe we see an offer like this. If we go to Belgium, where we have this duopoly situation with Belhacom and Telenet being by far the dominant providers, and with the regulator not really stepping in and really drive competition, we see, and this is an offer from Telenet, for €30 per month, you actually get 6 meg of internet, and that's it. No telephony included, no TV included. That's, of course, where they still make some extra revenues. If we go to Spain, I think pretty similar, actually, to Belgium. A very dominant incumbent, Telefonica. A strong cable network player, Ono. And the other guy is sort of struggling to grab market share and find a decent business model, like Jazztel, one of the alternative challengers, using the copper lines of Telefonica for their offerings. These guys are really struggling, and they have plenty of lawsuits with Telefonica to make sure they can get access to those copper lines in time to serve their customers. And I think they had a settlement 2 years ago, about €20 million, where Telefonica paid off all these lawsuits. But it proves that for a challenger using the copper lines of the incumbent, it's really hard to make a decent business. And that again translates also in relatively poor end-user offerings. This is an offering from Ono, the cable network provider, for €30 per month. It's basically internet and not a lot else. Last but not least, the Netherlands, my home country. We have the benefit of having a very open culture, a large internet exchange, which not only facilitates peering between domestic parties, but also which attracts a lot of international parties. So it becomes even easier to peer away a lot of your traffic. I think there's also, in general, a good cooperation between Dutch content owners and Dutch access networks. If you look at all the activities around the Olympics, where, of course, the Dutch public broadcasting organization wants to stream a lot of content to the access networks, these guys really work hand in hand, and it's not so that the access networks try to charge a lot of money to the content owners. And that again, translates, of course, into competitive offerings for the end users. KPN has an offering for €30 per month with pretty fast internet, TV channels, and unlimited telephony. I must admit that the TV part is a bit poor. It uses terrestrial wireless technology. And what we now see in the Dutch market is that the cable operators are really winning market share like hell. They have deployed the DOCSIS 3 technology, so they're offering internet speeds of 50 meg, 80 meg. They bundle it with their superior TV quality and with telephony. And for instance, UPC here have an offer for €45 per month, which has internet speeds of 25 meg, TV included, telephony included. And the funny thing is, although all this runs on a copper infrastructure, they actually call it fiber power. And Telenet in Belgium is doing the same thing. They're launching a similar service. They call it FiberNet. But of course, it does not have anything to do with fiber. It all just runs on our coax lines. Okay, if we try to draw some conclusions from what we've seen across Europe, I think the main conclusion is that there's maybe one Europe, but there's many different peering cultures in Europe. And I think what we also see is that a peering culture does not really have a direct impact on the experience and the cost for the end user. France is the most funny example, where an interesting peering culture, but a very strong end user offer. What we see is that lack of competition really drives the less attractive end user offerings, and that regulation in the axis of the local of the local loop is really what drives competition. Now that that concludes our presentation. If you'd like to discuss some more, or if you want to know more about Global Crossing, feel free to approach us at the booth here, either Paul, myself, or Roland Vrijheid. We have meeting rooms also here in the building. We actually have our IP node also here in the building in the PlixDC data center. So if you want to look at the technology, that's also possible. And last but not least, tonight at the event, we're organizing a small darts party. So if you believe you can still hit the bullseye after a couple of vodkas, then feel free to join us and win some of the prizes. Thank you very much.